They're going to wind up with 32 wins in a row. Down to Wayne Rasper. 1 second. The basket is good. And Indiana is the national champion. Going away, they trail by 6 points in the half. They came through with a tremendous second half and defeat Michigan, even worse than many people thought. They thought it would be a very tough game, but Indiana, maybe at the end of the year, was even better than they were during the entire season. The final score, Indiana, the new national champs, 86, and Michigan, 68.
It's been since 1976 that a team in men's college basketball got to celebrate a national championship after an undefeated season. Experienced Indiana, with senior guard and co-captain Quinn Buckner, outlasted their Big Ten rival in the finals to finish 32-0. Although Indiana had outstanding senior leadership, the principal figure of the Hoosiers was their head coach, remarkably successful, yet tremendously intense. Quinn, Bob Knight's successes and turbulence are each well documented. A proven winner with three national championships, 902 victories, and an authority figure in college basketball if there ever was one. When you began playing for him at Indiana, how did you handle his personality at first, and when did you get to the point where you accepted and even learned to embrace him, his personality?
Well, I grew up in a home blessed with a father who was demanding. And I didn't understand it was a blessing at the time, trust me. But given that, the way Coach Knight approached things was a little odd. I mean, because you're not used to anybody other than in my case, my father being so demanding. But it took a while because my dad is quietly demanding, where Coach Knight is more vocally demanding. And my father got me to the point to say, son, it's simple as this. Take what he says, not how he says it. Everybody expresses themselves in different ways. And when I got to that point, which is probably by the time I was a sophomore, and just accepted the way that he expressed himself and took what he said on face value and then tried to deal with what he said versus how he said it, then it was entirely different. It was not a hard thing to do. But, it took me probably the better part of probably a year and a half before I got comfortable with fully embracing that entire approach.
Was there a particular message from Coach Knight that stuck with you through your time there that really helped you?
Sure. Preparation is what it's about. Everybody wants to be successful, but few people are willing to prepare for the success. That's what he was about. That's why he was, and I have to say in quotes, because I've said this often, it's somewhat maniacal about the way he wanted us to prepare and practice, but he was that way, so when the game got on the line, you never feared that part of the game or any part of the game because you were so well prepared. So when you prepare, you have an extraordinary sense of confidence, and that's what I learned through that process.
As a team captain for three seasons, were you somewhat immune to Coach Knight's wrath for the most part, or were you more like a sounding board for his frustration?
No. Coach Knight, in all ways, is a brilliant guy. He would pick times when he would, get on me because he felt like I needed to be get on, and there's no question that was one of the reasons my mother, more so than my father, felt like I needed to be there. But he would also strategically pick times when he would tell Scott or Scott May or myself that today I'm going to be on you. I'm talking to, one of the other guys on the team. I'm going to be on you about X. So it was interesting being a part of the plot at that time, if you will. But it proved to be effective because not everybody can be demanded upon. And that was in this time. It's a little different this year. These years, everybody can't be demanded upon directly. Some have to be indirectly. And he knew that. And he knew personalities, knew who were strong enough to take it and strong enough not to. So he knew that I was strong enough to take it, as I said, because of my background. Scott was that way because Scott is a strong personality, though he's a quiet but strong personality. So It was always interesting to see what we were up to today is kind of what it was.
Many talk about the 1976 championship run for good reason, but little is discussed about the year prior, where you guys were unbeaten through the regular season, had lost Scott May to a broken left arm late in the year, and ultimately fell by 2 points to Kentucky in the regional final. How much of that was a motivating factor towards your preparation for the 75-76 season? Not necessarily to be perfect, but to at least go all the way.
Well, I think it was a huge, it's experience. It's part of your experience. So I think anybody that doesn't take that into consideration is kind of missed that. Experience is not something that can be accelerated, expedited. You go through them, and I'm sure, having been through that, I can't tell you all of the ways, but having lost to Kentucky when we thought we had the best team in basketball, because Scott had come back and played late, was a big motivating factor. I think the other thing that, quite frankly, is when you've got a group of seniors, and our class was the second class that Coach and I had coached, we were all seniors, so you also know that there's a time limit on what you're doing, and that forces a certain amount of focus and attention to detail and, some reminders, some historical or experiential reminders from the previous year as to what can happen if you don't pay attention to detail and do what you're supposed to do. So there's no doubt the 75 team impacted the 76 team greatly.
Yeah, in the regular season of 75-76, you guys started with UCLA, defending national champions, with their first game without John Wooden, and won by 20. That had to be very important to beat a high-profile team to somewhat put aside the stinging loss against Kentucky.
Well, what I remember about that is Coach Knight said to Scott May and I, he asked the question at the end of our sophomore year. We were done, and he said, we got a chance to play UCLA, and I don't know if he told us where or not. And so what do you think? Because that was the predominant school of basketball that everybody went to. All the really great players went to UCLA. So it was an opportunity to play against them. But when Coach Knight asked the question, Scott and I didn't hesitate. Yes, absolutely. Because if you're going to be the best, or you aspire to be the best, you want to play the best to understand what that's all about. And you got to measure up. And so we were eager to do that. And I think it was a big reason why we had success the rest of our career after that, because we met that challenge and met it well.
Another challenge was the game against Michigan at home on February 7th, in which turned out to be a 72-67 win in overtime. Was that, I know you had a couple, I think you had at least one other overtime game, but was that Michigan game the closest you think you came to defeat?
Michigan, yeah, they obviously had a great opportunity to beat us. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think the other one that really got our attention was as we were coming along, because we played Marquette and Alabama, both teams. Part of the reason you got seeding now was because we played those teams in those years. We played them early, and they were top 10 teams, and NCAA was trying to avoid that later on. But Alabama had us beaten as well. And one of their players hadn't played well, but it was an All-American. And they had us, I don't remember how far down, but that was before a shot clock. And if they had just been able to hold on to the ball, they had a good chance to beat us. They weren't able to hold on to it. We were able to make a couple plays, get ourselves some momentum, and get it back. But Alabama would have been one game that I thought more about the Alabama. I think more about the Alabama game than I did the Michigan game.
Going through the regular season, and you can answer this or correct me on this, it probably wasn't as pressure-filled as it would be for others trying to go unbeaten because of what happened the year before. So was it kind of a natural feeling almost for the team to go through that regular season as opposed to, as some say, well, just lose a game and take the pressure off?
Well, Coach Knight was never a proponent of that. I was not either. We were just trying to win the next game, period. End of subject. I don't care who it is, win. And that was always the way he kept it. Even in the game, it's when this possession gets to the next possession, it was a sense of staying in the moment and not getting too carried away or too far ahead of yourself. So that was the way we looked at it. And we felt confident going in every game. What we knew, and as we talked about before, is the preparation. We knew we were going to be well prepared. If we didn't win it, it was probably because something we didn't do, because we felt like we had all the pieces.
After the perfect regular season, an 18-0 mark in the Big Ten, as you just pointed out a few minutes ago, the NCAA tournament, before seeding, so you got an incredible slate of teams all ranked in the top 20, St. John's in the opener. Did the team embrace the fact that it was getting a really good test every round?
Listen, we embraced the next game. Whoever was there, we got to take them. and I guess in the sense of embracing, is like, all right, this is what, who we got to be, these are the things you got to do, and you just approach it that way. Short of that, we didn't give it much more thought than, this is a game we've got, and we got to figure out a way to win it, period. And you know, we started out, as you said, and it got tougher. Well, I don't know if it got tougher, but you just got tough games. But I think that helps you. Again, that's part of the experience of that you carry on when you're trying to go to the next step.
Did it also help that these teams, a lot of the teams that you played, you had already played previously? I think St. John's you had played earlier in the year. UCLA was the opener. Michigan, of course, a conference rival in the championship. Was it better to face those familiar opponents instead of getting a team that you maybe didn't know as much about?
I suspect it may be, but you can have an argument on both sides of that. When you play Michigan three times in a year, there's an argument that suggests by the time you play them three times, given your scenario, then maybe they have enough experience that they're able to overcome that. So I'm not sure that that's it doesn't hurt to have played them before because you have the experience, but the reality is you play them. And the good thing about college basketball is you only get that opportunity. So it's not like a seven-game series in the NBA. That opportunity is the one, and on that night, you have to be the better team. You have to play better than the opposition. It's very simple. So whether you play them or not, it's not nearly as important as you having a good game the night you play them.
It's left at fifth, and Michigan, at the end of the half, the underdog, is 6 points ahead of Indiana, which has won 31 games in a row this year.
The championship game against Michigan played at the Spectrum in Philadelphia. Down 35-29 at halftime. So what was the message from Coach Knight in the locker room?
I honestly don't recall it to the greatest degree, but Coach Knight was always one who firmly believed that we were prepared. I have to say, going into halftime, one of the things we had to consider, Bobby Wilkerson had gone down in the first half. And I say, you mentioned earlier about Scott May having gone out our junior year. Again, experience being part of that process, we all knew what we had to do given the circumstances. You know, he's not coming back. We all have to figure out how to make up for what Bobby did, which is he guarded everybody. He guarded all five positions and he rebounded as well. So we knew everybody had to step their game up. And Coach Knight wasn't, you know, brilliant as he is, did not overreact. This is what we have to do. Let's just go do it. And as I recall it, pretty much in that tone. It was not the way people like to portray him. It was, these are the facts. Here's what we need to do. Let's just go do it. And that's what we did.
It eventuated into an 86-68 victory. Scott May led the team with 26 points. Kent Benson had 25 and was the most outstanding player of the tournament. You scored 16. Looking back and looking at it from afar, I think the most admirable part of this team is that it was a team, as cliche as that might sound. All five starters, and I think a couple others, eventually were drafted into the NBA. So all of you had aspirations and plans for the next level, but there was never any sign of selfishness. Everyone was in it for the greater good of the team. How did you guys happen to maintain that selflessness?
Well, Coach Knight was a big part of that, but none of us, it's not like it is now where we had, you say the aspiration. It was more hopefulness. Some guys just, that's all they intend to do is to eventually get to the league. It's very different than it is today. The responsibility that people have today when they get these opportunities are so valuable in terms of financial, then that makes it the drive was different. Our drive was to win an NCAA championship, but it didn't impact what we were trying to get done in terms of our team. We had a selfless team, and I mentioned most of them. Tom Abernathy, who rarely gets mentioned, was a huge part of what we did because he was the guy that we could put on really good offensive players to free Scott up to do what he needed to do on offense for us. So we had everybody committed to their role, and that's a huge part of, I think, success of any group dynamic. People must commit and embrace the role, and all members of our team did that. But that was Coach Knight's doing it more than anybody else.
You know, there's something about an unbeaten champion in any sport, Kurt, and you've seen them in all phases of sport. And it's been a thrill to watch Bobby Knight's team this year. They've been the best team all year, and they've shown why they're the best this second half. They're beating an outstanding underdog team, and they're doing it with so much precision.
On January 5th, that team, yourself included, reunited for a ceremony at Assembly Hall to mark the 40th anniversary of the championship. The most notable absence was Bob Knight. Were you expecting, hoping he might appear? Because even though things ended so poorly for him at the school, he remained so beloved by the fans and you and your teammates.
No, Coach Knight feels strongly about his position, that he was, as much as he led us with the same energy, he feels what he feels. He is and will always be my coach. I will always love him. But he's a human being. I respect the way he feels about what he feels. Hope against hope would be the words that I would use, because you would hope, but it wasn't to be, and I wasn't surprised, because there was nothing to be surprised about. He was always adamant about his position, and it just didn't change.
Do you and your teammates, I don't know how often you guys get together, but do you and your teammates, whether it's together or remotely, Scott May or Kent Benson or whomever, have some sort of tradition, kind of like the 72 Dolphins, where they celebrate when the last unbeaten team loses?
Absolutely not. Well, we don't think about that. I mean, because, life is what it is. Somebody at some point will break that record. You expect, because that's how life is. So, but for us, the difference in the Dolphins were a professional team. And most people may or may not, whatever your view is about the Dolphins, the views that we simply have is an opportunity for some other kids to reach a very, very unique goal or situation to go undefeated. That, I don't think you can cheer against that. At least I don't cheer against it, and I don't, my teammates don't. And we definitely don't get together and don't pop champagne. Again, I'm not belittling or speaking ill of the Dolphins, because their feat was huge. The ones we have were we were young. We're 20 years old, just having a great time and having to do something that I cannot believe has lasted this long, but is obviously quite unique and terrific.
Yeah, considering, and you sort of answered it, considering the structure of teams today, it's been threatened. Obviously, last year with Kentucky, Wichita State went unbeaten through the regular season. UNLV in 1991 almost did it. Do you think the way teams are constructed today that we'll ever see another unbeaten team in college basketball, at least in the foreseeable future?
I don't know what the timetable is going to be, but prior to that, UCLA had their runs with Walton, and then Kareem had one. Undefeated national championships. Russell did. He eventually, at San Francisco, Bill Russell, I shouldn't just say Russell, but Bill did. At some point, I mean, the world has changed, but, the ways of the world are pretty much the same. Kentucky is a game away or two games away, whatever, from having that kind of success. That's the way it goes. But I think life is such that you don't be surprised.
We mentioned 1974-75 and how that was perfect until the Elite Eight. So you think about the chance of two straight unbeaten seasons, and if not for Scott May getting hurt, and may have very well been, would you even consider that the 74-75 team was better than the perfect one of 75-76?
There's not any doubt in my mind that it was a better team. It was a deeper team. We had two other guys that went to play in the professional league. Steve Green was a terrific shooter. In one corner, and he started our junior year, and John Laskowski came off the bench as one of the best rotation guys in basketball, and both of those guys played professional basketball. So I don't know how anybody can realistically say it wasn't a better team, but again, the thing about college is that it's one game, and if you're not playing the best in that one game, then, that knocks all of that other stuff over. But I have to say, the thing that most gratifying is a term that I would like to use, is the fact that the team in 74, 75, and 75, 76 had a great run through the Big Ten and was 18-0, or respectively 36-0. That to me is huge when you look at the kind of talent that comes through the Big Ten. That's probably as much of a point of gratification for me personally as well as winning the national championship. The undefeated season was something that occurred. The other things are really, I think, pretty substantial.
On the NBA level, you joined the Boston Celtics in 1982 and would win an NBA championship in 1984. What similarities, what correlations can you make, Quinn, to the tradition of Indiana Hoosiers basketball to Boston Celtics basketball?
Well, I've been very, very blessed from an athlete. I've been blessed, period. Having won in high school and then winning at Indiana, championships in high school, Indiana, and the Olympics and Boston. What I know about teams that have that kind of success is the selfless commitment of the players to the goal. Everybody is willing to make whatever commitment that has to be made in order for you to win, and then make adjustments as need to be. And in any group dynamic, as I like to look at them, you've got to have that. You've got to have one goal, and everybody has to be sacrificial in a lot of ways and be committed 100% to it. Or it doesn't happen. It just doesn't.
You touched on it. The title with Indiana, title with Boston. You won in high school back-to-back state titles, and then the gold medal with the 76 U.S. Olympic team. The only other two to have championships on those four levels are pretty esteemed company, Magic Johnson and Jerry Lucas. Is it possible to distinguish one over the others?
Mine has always been the Olympics. There is no better goal, no better feeling than have represented your country successfully. It's not even close.
No.
Plain and simple.
No, I would agree with that. And since your playing days, you've done a lot of broadcasting for NBC, CBS, currently in your role with the Indiana Pacers, specifically with college basketball, since we're in March as we speak. Do you have a favorite NCAA tournament game that you called? Because the first one I think of is going 20 years back, that Princeton game against UCLA, beating UCLA in a huge upset. Maybe I'm forgetting one, but so can you pinpoint a favorite moment during your time calling those NCAA tournament games?
The blessings have been plentiful. That was a significant game. There's no question that was big. The hard one, but one that is memorable, is in the NCAA tournament during Loyola Marymount when Bo Kimble shot the first free throw left-handed for Hank Gathers. That one will always be something that I'll remember as well. I mean, because memories are really all you have, that one was so significant given the circumstances. And you mentioned the other one. The UCLA game was interesting because it was pretty predictable what they were going to do. You're going to get back cut. and there was going to be a chance that Princeton could win the game on the back cut on the last play. And that's essentially what happened. So, yeah, I think those are the two that probably stick out as much as anything.
You know they're going to try to run a backdoor play if they can get it.
Under 10. Backdoor.
Oh, yes! He got it!
3-point 2.2 seconds remaining. 43-41. UCLA down. Cameron Dollar inbounding the basketball.
Well, that's where the timeout was called, but they got to watch the lob.
Here's Bailey. He'll get it off.
That Princeton victory over UCLA in 1996, in addition to Bo Kimble's tribute to Hank Gathers at the free throw line in 1990, are moments that continue to hold a place in tournament lore, as does the perfect season of 40 years back by Buckner and the Indiana Hoosiers. Upon winning the national title in 1975-76, Quinn had concluded his college career with a remarkable record of 108-12. His legacy as a winner, leader, and strong defensive presence earned him a place in the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame in 2015. Brian Wright, thanking you for listening to this edition of Profiles in Sports. Be sure to tune in next time.